from the Formic Acid Studios of WDIY FM in Bethlehem, PA, it is time for another Ixnay the Ants episode of Chemical Free Horticultural Hijinks, You Bet Your Garden. Are lots of little ants invading your home? Are you freaking out about it? Maybe even spraying with abandon, but with little knowledge? I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and on today's show, I'll tell you how to take back your kitchen counters. Otherwise, it's a fabulous phone call show. Yes, we will take your telecommunicated questions, comments, tips, tricks, suggestions, and grimly gargantuan gentrifications. So keep your ears right here, because it's all coming up faster than you wondering where those ants went.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at wdiy.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath, and our In the News segment for this week is more than timely as I report on an unusual bit of entomology that we are calling Lord of the Flies. If a family member enters your home at this time of year and asks, "Hey, who let all these flies in?" The answer is, "Y'all did, but you let them in last year, just like those stink bugs and Asian ladybugs." Our story begins. I woke up a little over a week ago, stumbled out of bed, and noticed two flies in the kitchen, trying to beat themselves to death on the windows. I thought I remembered what this was all about, so I removed the screen, opened the window, and they both immediately flew out. I had been correct. Yay! These were not house flies. They were cluster flies, also known as attic flies. Like marmorated stink bugs, which appear to be in decline around here, and multicolored Asian lady beetles, they had gotten into the house during fall, hibernated, and had just awakened with one thought on their tiny little fly minds: get outside and start attacking earthworms. Yes, earthworms. I will now temporarily turn things over to Wikipedia, whose good work I financially support. And we quote the wise Wiki: cluster flies, aka grass flies or attic flies, are flies of the genus Pollenia. Unlike the more familiar blowflies, such as the bluebottle genus Formiae, they do not lay eggs in human food.
Well, isn't that nice of them?
Instead, they parasitize earthworms. The females lay their eggs near earthworm burrows, and the larvae then feed on the worms. But the biology of this group is poorly understood, and a few have been reported to use other hosts, including caterpillars. Cluster flies seek refuge in cold weather and find their way into attic spaces and similar areas indoors. They emerge in the spring on warm days. We were in the middle of a highly out-of-season heat wave at the time. Then they cluster at windows, attempting to exit. Hence the name. And Wiki, back to me. My family came home from an errand shortly after I woke up and immediately chided me. "Why is that window open? Look at all the flies you're letting in." One such fly was trying especially hard to get out. So I cranked that window open and it immediately flew out, followed by another one for an encore. In our southeastern Pennsylvania home, cluster flies are a rare occurrence, only showing up every 5 or 10 years or so. They are slow and clumsy and easily swatted or caught on yellow sticky traps. But I prefer to release most of them instead in the hope that they will attack Asian jumping worms as well as my regular ones. That makes them beneficial predators, unless you're low on earthworms, of course. And if you are, you need to improve your soil. Compost, more compost. Prevention is the same as with the other indoor hibernating insects. Inspect the upper areas of your home, especially the south-facing side, and caulk to close any little openings you find to make sure they don't have easy access to your home as summer slides into fall.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath. Do you have ants in your pants? Probably not, but you may have them in your kitchen. And they are so easy to get rid of, and people do all sorts of crazy things when, again, the solution is simple. It's as simple as I am. 610-694-8100. That's the number to call. Kathy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Kath. How you doing?
I'm good. Good, cold. Cold, okay. But good.
And where is Kathy cold?
Montpelier, Vermont.
That makes sense.
Yes.
What can we do for Kathy in Vermont?
Okay, well, I have this small, I mean, it's really small Amelanchier that I planted 2 years ago. Like the kind you get that little thing from a conservation sale. So it, the first year I planted it, a groundhog ate all its leaves off. So it leafed back out. Now, last year, it did pretty well. But then during the winter, when we had to have some excavation, there was this pile of big rocks pushed up near to it. And now there's a big ridge of soil pushing on it, and it's tilted about 45 degrees.
Okay.
I felt it, and
okay.
It's still solid.
Yeah. That's all we need to know. I'm calling the police.
Okay.
this tree needs to be rescued from your possession.
But it's ready to leaf out. I mean, it's solid. It doesn't wiggle. I just want to try to get it straight again.
Okay. I didn't catch the name of the tree.
It's like a Amelanchier, you know, a serviceberry.
Oh, okay. You got to use the Latin words to try to confuse McGrath, huh? You couldn't just call it a service berry or a June berry. Now, what's the deal with the soil and everything? Is this going to change?
No, it's just, it's kind of behind our house. It's near to some woods. It's just whatever soil was in that spot. It's nothing special.
But, I mean, it's not going to be rescued from the soil crushing against it.
No, because it's pushed up in front of it, like. So it's like there's a ridge. So it missed being squashed by about 6 inches. Huh. About 6 inches from it is this kind of pushed up pile that made it bend.
3/4 of our listeners are sobbing in tears right now. So it is the perfect time of year. Is there another place for this tree, someplace less treacherous than the cage of death it's in now?
Well, I mean, maybe, but I think it'll be good where it is. It's kind of near the edge of a woods. I think it'll...
You said that, and you also said the gopher was in on the attempted assassination of this tree. So being planted really close to the woods is not a positive pretty much for any plant. Okay. You got a lot of deer up where you are. You've got obviously groundhogs, probably got evil squirrels. You know, once this tree grows up, you're going to have a hard enough time protecting the berries so that you get some. Although you will be feeding the birds in the most natural way in the meantime. Now, come on, how about the front of the house?
I suppose I could move it. I hadn't thought of that. I'd only thought about getting it, you know, straightened back up and maybe staking it somehow where it is. But
No. It's time to abandon this car and get a new one. Anytime you pull into a service station and you say, fill up the oil and check the gas, it's time for a new car. And for this plant, it is time for a new location. How is the sun exposure out front?
Pretty much full sun.
And where does the sun come from as it hits the front of the house?
It goes east to west across the roof. So I guess that means that
It would face east.
Well, it kind of goes over the house. It would face the front yard, faces south.
Oh, okay. Well, the tree's going to be very happy. So what I want you to do, did you plant the tree?
I did.
And you said it was one of these pitiful little half trees that you get for Arbor Day or something like that?
Exactly. Yeah, from a conservation district.
So
they have their tree sale.
So it didn't have any wrappings around the roots. You got it in a Dixie cup of soil or something.
Yeah, it was bare root, actually.
Okay, well, that's good. That's good. So what I want you to do, because now we don't have to worry whether you smothered the roots with burlap or left it inside a cage. Is your soil saturated now, or are you still dry?
It's not too bad. I mean, you know, snow's melting. It's all drying out pretty well.
But I want the soil to be wet.
Oh, yeah. That's no problem.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So I want you to get some help and get a couple of shovels, and starting about a foot away from the tree, dig down straight and make a complete circle around the tree. Then go around that circle again a couple of times until you can actually lift it out. And try to lift it with the entire island of soil. And then get the new hole ready. Remember, you want to plant the tree high. It should end up with its root flare above ground.
Okay,
so don't make it, if it looks like a lollipop, you planted it too deep. Believe it or not, quote, shallow planted trees are much sturdier in storms because they've had the kind of lateral root growth that really allows them to grip the surface. So you go out to your front yard, and now you do like the Indiana Jones with the idol, finagling, you know, putting more soil back into the hole, taking a little bit out until you get it just right, and then fill the hole back in with the same soil you removed. Don't improve the soil in the planting hole because that's the soil your tree's roots are going to need to grow out of. You don't want to give them a little romper room where they only have to go 6 inches and then they hit clay. Do this, and as you do it, angle the tree so that it appears upright.
Okay.
You know, in other words, you'll drop it in at the reverse angle. And if it has full southern exposure, you don't have to mess around with angling it so that the sun helps it out. It'll grow up straight from there. And you may have a weird-looking hole, but that's fine.
Yeah.
Then water it deeply. That means I want you to leave a hose drip at the base of the plant for at least 8 hours, maybe 24 hours. Remember, this is just like an annoying faucet drip. You're really saturating the soil. And then do you have access to compost?
Yeah, I could.
Okay, where are you going to get it?
Yeah. Well, actually, there's a cemetery near me,
and
they grind all the leaves.
Wait a minute.
I'm thinking of leaves and trees on a cemetery.
I got to wipe that image out of my mind. Oh, dear.
I never thought of it like that.
Oh, anyway. I'll never be able to not think of it.
Well, they shred all their leaves, and they put them in a pile in back, and they get local horse manure, and they make their own compost in the back.
Yeah, but you'd have to make sure the compost was finished.
Right.
You know.
I could go to garden center. I could go to a garden center.
I think you should go to a garden center for at least a bag of real premium compost. That's one with a brand name and writing and contact information, not a white bag with the word compost stamped on it. So get a good high-quality compost starting 6 inches away from the trunk of the tree. Use up all the compost. Go out as far as you can in a complete circle. It'll look nice, and it'll also be a reminder not to mow too close to the tree. And you're done.
Okay.
Water it during dry spells, because this will technically be its first year in the ground. And if you do, you know, go a week without rain, do that drip, drip, drip thing for a good 8 to 24 hours, and that'll really saturate the soil and encourage the roots to grow out and be bigger and stronger.
Okay, I think we can do this.
Then you'll call me back next year to see how you can get to eat some of the berries instead of the wildlife.
Okay. We'll see if it manages some berries.
I'll talk to you next year.
All right.
It may not manage the berries this year, but next year for sure.
Yeah, someday. I can wait.
Yeah, it's not as long a wait as other fruit trees.
Okay?
All
right, well, that sounds great. I think we can do that.
All right, thanks for calling. We love you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right, thanks for having it. Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that my free appearance at the Allentown Public Library on Monday, April 27 at 6 p.m. is right around the corner. So please visit allentownpl.org/events for all the details and to pre-register for this rockin' free event. Then come back to hear the right ways to say Ixnay to ants and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the NPR studios of WDIY FM in Bethlehem, PA.
Do you have vinyl albums, 45s, or CDs on your shelves that are taking up space and gathering dust? Why not donate them for a good cause? WDIY will receive profits from the donation, and you can claim a tax deduction. For more information, or to arrange for a drop-off or pickup, call 610-694-8100 or visit WDIY.org.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM AM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up, do you have ants in your pants? Probably not, but you may have them in your kitchen. The solution is simple. Before we get to that, we got a little special feature here. I've been poking around the internet, looking at garden sites and seeing what foolishness people are saying to each other. And one of them was so interesting and touched on so many topics. I figured that we, James and I, he would play Jason in Abington, a member of the Abington Free Garden Community. The title of Jason's post was Vegetable Garden Advice. And I will, of course, play the mysterious voice from beyond. So here is James doing Jason.
Hi, all. I need some advice. We moved into our house about 4 years ago, and it came with raised beds around a dogwood tree. I have been adding raised bed soil each year, but it's expensive to get enough to fill them properly.
So here's where I would interrupt a real caller. Raised bed soil. That means nothing to me. The note that it's expensive to get enough to fill the beds properly leads me to believe you're buying in bags. You should go to our archives, the You Bet Your Garden archives, which you can click through at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page, because we've been trying to cover all the necessary early season advice. You'll see a couple of discussions about soil. But basically, if you're going to do a lot, you want to find a reliable source of bulk soil and compost. You want to bring a 5-gallon bucket back, which we will find out Jason has a lot of. You'll bring back a 5-gallon bucket of each to your home, and then you'll pour them into pots. And in one pot, you'll put whatever seeds you got. The biggest ones, the better. Typically, scientists use bean seeds. And the other one you're going to leave alone, and you're going to water them both. If the bean seeds come up nice and green, it means there aren't a lot of herbicide residues in what most people are going to be calling topsoil. And if the other bed stays empty, that means it's free of weed seeds. Those are the two big ones. But I would suggest you find some local soils. You're in Abington. There's a million garden centers around you. Abington is in Pennsylvania, by the way. So there's no excuse. And you'll save money in the long run. And you'll have soil to add as you continue to grow. Just a combination of screened topsoil, premium compost, and perlite. Make up your own mix. I don't care. Anyway, back to Jason, played by James.
Even though I've been moderately successful at food gardening, I don't really know what I'm doing. Herbs, tomatoes, cucumbers, and zucchini are about the only things that have consistently performed well, but the zucchini leaves get so large they start to choke out the other vegetables, and the tomatoes grow into the branches of the dogwood as they get big. Honestly, the bed that wraps around the tree has been difficult to figure out how to tent. Even though I added some foot and a half tall fencing, we still get bunnies that have been able to jump in and eat things. This year, I bought some plastic tubing to make tents with insect netting to hopefully keep the bunnies out, although the U-shaped section of the bed will prove challenging to tent.
Whoa. Okay. American rabbits do not dig, but they do have a limited ability to jump. Stop playing around with Rube Goldberg stuff. Go out and get 2-foot high hardware, cloth, edging, whatever you want to do. Bang it around the bed into, if the raised bed, you want it on the inside of the raised bed. You don't want to waste the space of the sides. So 2 feet, push it into the ground, maybe 4 inches, and the bunnies, which cannot climb, will be deterred. And that's only if you've seen bunnies. If you see damage and then you see bunnies not causing it, you have to come out at night and look for slugs.
Other than the herbs, I don't know what to plant or where. I've watched YouTube channels, and in some ways they have helped, but in other ways I feel overwhelmed. I moved my pepper plants into food-safe buckets to move them to cooler locations when it gets too hot.
Man. Okay. Food-safe buckets. A bucket is a bucket. It's ugly, and it's not designed for gardening. People who grow in 5-gallon buckets are the ones the neighbors are constantly complaining about to the township. There are a few things in life uglier. Why don't you just put a dead car out there in the middle of it all and call it an installation? If you're going to put plants in pots, use real pots. They have the right shape, they have the right drainage, and they look nice. You want things to look nice when you go out there. If this is your respite, make it a good one. If you feel you have to use 5-gallon buckets, realize that you're putting half as much dirt or whatever in there as the plant needs, whereby containers will, you know, kind of suit the bill less expensively. And buckets have to be up on like pallets, so any water drains through them. But because of the design of the buckets, it's going to be constantly wet at the bottom. So, you know, just because you have something doesn't mean it belongs in the garden. And peppers. When did peppers need to be moved to cooler locations? Peppers are sun-loving crops. They don't want to be moved to cooler locations when it gets too hot. Maybe a little afternoon shade. But you're in Abington. You know, how hot is it going to get? And they grew up. They are native to parts of the world where it's always hot. So don't know why you thought they needed a cooler, but they do not.
I started a couple of soft-sided containers for carrots and potatoes. I have some corn seedlings that I'm unsure of where to plant.
Well, isn't that interesting? Corn seedlings. I wonder if he bought them at a store or just pre-sprouted them in containers. Corn does not transplant well. That's one of the reasons farmers generally use treated seed, which is coated with chemicals, to protect it from rotting in the cold spring soil. I've never heard of anybody transplanting corn. But if you do, I will tell you that the minimum amount of corn to actually get a harvest is 36 ears, and not all in a row. You want to pack them together. I used to make a fake boxing ring, because that's what happens is when those pollen tips appear at the top, they're dropping the corn pollen right down into the corn. And the idea is for it to go into the developing ear. And I've heard, I don't know if this is true, but every pollen grain that gets in becomes a kernel of corn. your only other alternative, if you just did this for fun, is plant them individually where you can see them. When the pollen heads come out, go out every day when it's dry and rub your hand up and down so the grains go down into the corn. It makes a great display. And sometimes you get lucky, and because you're pushing all the pollen where it needs to go, you might even get a couple of ears of corn.
And I'm thinking about creating a mulched area and adding a trellis for tomatoes and possibly putting the cucumbers and zucchini in buckets in that area as well.
Stop with the buckets. Why buckets? You got raised beds. These things belong in the ground where their roots can grow to the level they want, where the roots can dry out naturally in between waterings. I don't get this bucket thing. Now, mulch, a mulched area. As I have said frequently, mulch is anything that covers the soil to prevent weeds and retain soil moisture. Sheet metal makes an excellent mulch, you know, as long as you have a welder to make the holes for the plants. Do not buy cheap dyed, chipped up wood waste. Yes, I know everybody else does it, which is often a sign that it's wrong. When landfills stopped accepting trees and greenery, the trees had to be diverted. And so they were given to chipping plants, and the chipping plant chipped them all up and then spray painted them either toxic black or some god-awful color never seen in nature that makes it look like a Burger King exploded on your lawn. These cheap wood mulches breed nuisance molds, fungi, and encourage plant disease. A 2-inch mulch of real compost, that's not composted horse manure or anything else, compost, a 2-inch layer of compost on your soil prevents weeds just as well. That has been shown in scientific studies. It also feeds your plants all you're going to need for this season, and it doesn't breed nuisance molds. All right, James, where are we?
I have lettuce, spinach, onions, and garlic that I need to plant too.
Oh, which of these does not belong? Lettuce. I have my lettuce in the ground. I have my spinach in the ground. This is about the time in here in southeastern Pennsylvania to plant onion sets in the ground. Garlic, however, is planted in the fall. You take your best cloves from the planting garlic you've bought or from a friend, or organic garlic you buy at a farmer's market. Do not use supermarket garlic. It has been sprayed with many intolerable things, including a chemical that prevents it from sprouting. So as the weather gets cool, anytime, I like to get mine in October. You take individual cloves, plant them 6 inches deep, 6 inches apart in nice compost-rich soil. Essentially, leave them alone. They will grow. They will survive winter. They'll grow even faster in the spring. You harvest around the 4th of July when 1/3 of all the plants have turned brown at the bottom. But you're not going to get nothing if you plant garlic now. And you say you have it, so see if it's any good for cooking.
I've also grown strawberries from the beginning, but have never harvested a single berry because of the bunnies and or birds.
Okay, well, that's real simple. It is not easy to grow strawberries, which is why so many people grow them in strawberry pots, and then throw fine netting, not over the top, but first you would install a little, like a radio tower, I don't know, something that sticks up around 6 inches. Because if the berries touch your netting, they'll just eat them that way. So strawberries are easy, but they must be protected from the birds. And I've never understood growing strawberries in the ground because, as you say, your bunnies and, of course, biggest enemy is slugs at night. Okay, that's all they had to say. Now, it seems to me that you are a member of a community gardening group. The ones who have been gardening there for a few years will offer better advice than YouTube or other non-fact-checked channels where, quote, influencers who talk about, well, I did it this way. And their way may have ended up poorly and also be in a garden thousands of miles from yours. Which brings us to a note to well-intentioned people. Please don't respond to a gardener's questions with guesses and rumors. I assume you don't mean any harm, but you are muddying the waters from real answers and perhaps even harming the gardening question. Please limit responses to actual viable advice, and everybody wins. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and re-announce that I will make a rare personal appearance at the Allentown Public Library this Monday, April 27th. At 6 p.m. Visit allentownpl.org/events for all the details and to register for this free event. Then we'll be right back with the correct ways to antagonize those invading ants and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Fabulous Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the NPR studios of WDIY FM in Bethlehem, PA. Are you finally getting ready to plant your garden? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, I'll tell you what you should and shouldn't be doing to have great eating this summer. Plus your fabulous phone calls. That's on the next You Bet Your Garden. Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from WDIY FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath, and yes, we are in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we will have your kitchen ant-free, and we will have it ant-free in a way that you can repeat year after year, and it's non-toxic, and it's coming up right after this. Tom, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks, Mike.
Well, thank you, Tom. How you doing, man?
Really well, really well. How are you? I know your health has had some issues.
Oh, yeah. Well, don't get old, people. It's a warning. It's a trap. Where is Tom located?
I'm in Durham, North Carolina. I've seen information about biochar / terra preta, which is like an Amazonian soil, and I'm wondering, you know, if you've looked into it at all. I saw some stuff come out of Cornell that seems to say that it would be pretty interesting as a soil amendment.
Well, you know, this is fascinating. I haven't heard anybody mention biochar for a long time. And allegedly, biochar, which is burnt wood, charcoal, was found underneath, so to speak, the growing beds in some ancient Aztec civilizations, and people picked up on it from there. If you're like me and you have a wood stove, when you clean it out, there's always that one log that didn't turn to powder. And if you want to experiment with biochar, there you go. But I don't see the benefit, especially because its nutrients are lost. They went up in the flames. But I'm not sure how it would help underground, where it would be protected, so to speak, from oxygen and not be very reactive. Now, have you played around with it at all, or you're just bored and looking new to do?
Well, yeah, it looks like an interesting project to me. And some of the stuff I've seen on YouTube talked about a guy who was using hardwood charcoal that you'd use for, grilling, and impregnating it with water and compost, basically compost tea, as a way to make the charcoal a substrate for additional nutrients, which looked interesting to me.
So
I'm thinking this would be a good thing to do in a bed.
So he's using the naturally occurring holes and crevices in the charcoal to hold nutrients, kind of like perlite does as it loosens the soil in a raised bed garden. I would caution people not to use it in their soil. You never want to put any kind of wood product or dry brown material like leaves incorporated in your soil. But, you know, we're kind of dancing around a technique that I have been using for the past couple years called Hugel culture, which is a discipline of permaculture. And because I live in the woods, there's always rotting limbs and branches and stuff littering the ground. It's material, right? It's active material. It's got biomass. There's got to be a good use for it. And the people who developed Hugel culture found that if you especially choose the really softest of the woods and you make a layer underneath your raised bed soil, that wood, because it's already half rotten, that's going to continue to deteriorate and eventually become food for your plants slowly over time. And if you're like me and you have taller and taller raised beds every year, it's a great way to use up the space that's
right
beyond the root zone of the plants. So it's almost like slow release fertilizer. But I would love to hear from people who've actually utilized it, because you haven't done anything with it yet, right?
Nope.
Yeah.
Let me give it a try.
And you mentioned hardwood charcoal, you know, because one of the big trends also around that time was using wood to grill. You know, you would get the high heat off the, not fresh wood, it would be weathered wood, it would be ready to use, but you'd end up with charcoal in the bottom. And this was at Rodale, and nothing ever got thrown away. I mean, there was no way.
Sure.
So people would try it. But if you're going to, quote, buy charcoal or anything like that, you'd have to get it at a place like Whole Foods, where it wouldn't be impregnated with chemicals or anything like that. But what do you grow mostly?
Tomatoes, peppers, you know, the kind of the classics. So I've got a little bit of time yet to play around with something.
Yeah, I would suggest if you want to have fun and do some citizen science, make some biochar. You know, I like the idea if you have a grill that can accommodate hardwood grilling, there's nothing like it, man. It's better than gas. It's better than charcoal. And then you'd get your own charcoal from it. And plant two Amish paste tomatoes one with that underneath the root zone and one without. And
yeah, there you go.
Do that with a couple of your plants and take notes and call us back at the end of the season. You may rejuvenate interest in biochar.
Great. That'd be awesome.
All right, man.
All right. Thanks a lot, Mike. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure talking to you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
And now, as promised, the question of the week. Anne Marie in Swarthmore, PA writes, SOS, we have a small brown ant invasion. The ants are small. The invasion is not. They come over our porch and converge into one entrance under the front door. We have not been able to find the hole from which they are emergent. We have been trying all the organic control methods, bleaching all trails and entranceways on the concrete slab, putting down borax, endless vacuuming in the kitchen they have invaded. We did use some bait traps in the house, but the ants crawled around them. We have one more trick to try this afternoon. Borax mixed with sugar and water in a cap placed in their trails, which reform a few hours after bleaching. We also have been using Windex for spot massacres outside, but the hordes continue. They have only entered the kitchen at this point, but they have made a playground of the floor and the countertops. We've decided to call an exterminator who understands organics. Good luck with that. And the mysterious life of these invasive little brats. We intend to ask any potential exterminators what, quote, chemicals they will be using. However, we don't know which chemicals should be avoided and which would be acceptable. We know we need to eradicate the main colony and certainly don't want to encourage them to blaze new trails into the house, especially up the walls and into the windows. You know the overabundance of information on the web, which I do all too well. And who knows what might be true? We've spoken to the few organic friends we have, and they have either managed to end the problem with borax, traps, and bleach, or are also looking for an exterminator. So help! We don't want any chemicals or awkwardly placed devices in the house, since there are people with severe vision problems involved. We hope you will be able to help us. Okay, as with many people facing any kind of insect in the house, you need to relax. You seem to be in an ant frenzy panic and have thrown everything but the proverbial kitchen sink at these little buggers. Oh, Lord, yes. There's a lot of information and misinformation on the internet, and the variety of suggestions is mind-boggling. I don't blame you for being confused. So let's help you sort through some things. First, you do not need an exterminator. They would either spray a toxic pesticide in the house and where the ants seem to be entering, leaving you to inhale said pesticide 24/7. Remember, if you can smell it, it is getting into your lungs and then into your bloodstream. Or you could place the traps I'm about to recommend, which you can do yourself and save a lot of money. I also want to point out, I should do this every show, that there's nothing organic about bleach. It's a World War I trench gas that was used to kill millions and, when airborne, still has a highly negative effect on human and pet health. Again, if you can smell it, you're putting it in your body. And no, gardeners, you don't need to bleach your seed starting supplies. Honestly, I've never even washed mine, and I haven't had a problem in 35 plus years. But if you must clean them, if you feel you absolutely have to, rinse them in a dilute solution of white household vinegar. Now, you may have already solved your problem, but only so long as you use the correct amount of borax and then left the ants alone. The first line of ant defense should always be boric acid-based bait stations. These prepackaged stations are readily available and inexpensive, and there's no guesswork about getting the potency of the boric acid and the sugar content correct. But then comes the hard part. The low dose of boric acid in these traps does not kill any ants immediately. And you must allow these ants to travel freely back to the nest, where they will feed the slow-acting poison to the queen. After a few days, the ants will get sick, and within a week, the queen and her colony will be dead. Killing the ants one by one is counterproductive. You must let them come and go freely during the process. Then you can erase their pheromone trails with soap and water and white vinegar. Ditch the bleach. And what is this with the Windex? Is this four weddings and a funeral? Now, there's no way of telling why this queen settled near your home. These things appear to be random and often occur at the change of seasons. But you also shouldn't tempt them to hang around. Don't leave pet food on your patio or porch and take down any seed feeders for the birds. The mess that falls underneath the feeder is great at attracting ants, as well as more dangerous mice and rats. Boric acid is a refined form of the element boron, so the traps labels may identify their active ingredient as boric acid, boron, borax, or sodium tetraborate. At the end of the day, it's all about the boron. And finally, instead of an exterminator, it sounds like you need to call a handyman to apply caulk around the areas they're currently using to enter the house and to fix that door so there's no openings. No Windex, okay? Well, that sure was some good information about fighting those little kitchen invaders now, wasn't it? Luckily, you can read that article over at your leisure or your leisure. Just click the link for the question of the week at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Yikes, my producer is threatening to assist my aunts if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 610-694-8100. Yes, we're still taping new shows, and we need your phone calls. Or sure, send us your email. You're tired, you're poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at youbetyourgarden1@gmail.com. As always, it makes our day if you include your location. You'll find all of our contact information, plus answers to your garden questions, audio of this show, audio of recent shows, links to our internationally renowned podcast, and important information about our upcoming next venue. It's all at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. You Bet Your Garden is an hour-long public radio show and podcast, all produced and delivered to you weekly by NPR station WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. You Bet Your Garden was created by Mike McGrath. Mike McGrath was created when Amazing Fantasy number 15 hit the newsstands. Our musical director is Ken Queter. Our social media director is Amanda Norfleet. Our peerless prince of profound production is James Ziprah. Margaret McConnell is the executive director of WDIY-FM. Our executive producer is the always lovely Jonas Bowen. And our incredible assistant is the awesome Ninja Sean. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and I'll be a potato planting fool until I see you again next week.